Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Well, hello, raw feeders. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and where friends don't let friends feed kibble. And there's Lozzie saying hello in the background. Always know when I'm getting on a podcast. Well, I just got back from Cheyenne Frontier Days, and I got back too late last night to get a podcast on for you guys, so I apologize. But I just got to say, I love rodeos. I love them because it's so, number one, it's patriotic. It's all about being an American, right? That's one thing that you always see at rodeos. It's just this very cordial place to be, right? Everybody's nice and cordial. And the other thing is the love of country. The other thing is the love of the animals. I watched these girls, these barrel racers. And I will say a lot of them at the Cheyenne Frontier Days is a very high level are from Oklahoma. Thank you. My hometown. Put out a lot of cool people in Oklahoma. So way to go. Oklahoma is okay. But anyway, they get up to do their kind of, you know, they talk to them after they win. And these girls would break down. They were so emotional when they were talking about winning because they were talking about their horse and how hard this horse worked for them and what a team they are. And it was just so touching. And you see that at rodeos where it's like the love of animal, the love of country, the love of being an American. Yeah, I love rodeos. So if you ever can get out to a rodeo, do so, because I think they're just fabulous. And if you can ever go and watch the working dogs work at rodeos, you know, they have those exhibits. That touches your heart. That's amazing. I got to tell you guys another thing that touched my heart today was some information that I got back from a new feeder. And I want to say something about what you guys do in the world when you talk to people about how to help their pets come off of an illness or be healthy. And I got this email today, and it was from a girl named Lori. And Lori said this: "Your dog food saved my dog's life. He gained a pound a week. He's an animal now. So much energy and strength. Thank you so much." And so customer service said, what was going on with your dog prior to Raw? And she said, and this dog's name is Buster, and just a gorgeous dog. She said, Buster had pancreatitis, had lost a lot of weight, and the vet had had him on 4 cans of prescription food per day, and he wasn't gaining at all. She had him in agility and he did okay at first, but then he was dealing with this pancreatitis. And she told Amber Matusik, who listens to the podcast, who sends us questions. She told Amber about what was going on with her dog and she recommended our food. And then we get this information back from Lori, who said, this food is saving his life. So way to go, Amber. Way to go, Amber. And you know, this is what it's all about. When you have a dog who you have seen with your own eyes do so much better getting off prescription food and getting off the traditional merry-go-round, you can recommend it to somebody who doesn't know. And you could save a pet's life. You, Amber, help save this dog's life. Not us. I mean, we didn't know anything about it. Yes, we provide the food and we try to provide education, but it's all about you guys really getting out there and being a member of the Raw Squad, because that's what you are. You're a member of the Raw Squad. You're out there helping people understand that toxins are not what is going to save your dog, right? And look, you know, I'm torn about the vets. I really am. And I think you hear it in my podcast, but it makes me angry that someone is in a position to help a pet and then does things that are substandard for that pet. Do I think that vets don't know? It's hard for me to say that they don't, because they have to know. There's too many people that feed raw. Now, you've heard Dr. Jasek and I talk about this. Are they in a tough spot? Could be. But I guess it all depends on, you know, what you want to do. But you pet parents, you could do it. You can go out there and you can talk to other people and you can just say, hey, give this a try. Give it a try. I've seen so many sick pets get well once they get off the poisons and the toxins and all of that jazz. So thank you, Amber, for doing what you do. And thank you for so many of you pet parents out there that I don't even know, but I know you're talking to other people about a species appropriate diet. And it doesn't matter if they buy from us or not. We're just talking about the health of the dog and what they can do to bring these dogs back to a healthy position. All right. So when I hear something that has really good information and there's a narrative out there that's contrary to what we know works, I think it's always great that you guys hear it from as many vets as you can. So I was listening to Dr. Judy Morgan talk, and it was back in March when she was giving this talk on kidney disease. And she was talking about, what do you do? What do you feed a dog when they have kidney disease? And I found her talk and I wanted to share it with you today. It's not that long. It's, you know, 18 minutes or so, but I think it's going to clear up some of the misinformation that you might get from the traditional side. And she is going to talk about what the holistic vets, which is what she is now. She was on the traditional side. She's now in the holistic field. What those two options are and why they are different. All right. So here is Dr. Judy Morgan. And she's going to tell you a little bit about kidney disease.
We're going to talk about feeding our animals with kidney disease. And this becomes a big dividing point for traditional versus holistic veterinarians. And personally, I think that the holistic veterinarians have a better way of dealing with this. And I've seen that come to fruition with my own dogs that have had kidney disease. I'm going to kind of compare the difference between traditional and holistic feeding ideas for animals with kidney disease. From a traditional standpoint, when we were talking about SDMA, I said that I get very frustrated because a lot of times a traditional veterinarian will see an SDMA that is 1 point above normal and instantly declare that the animal has kidney disease and insist that the animal be immediately placed on a restricted prescription diet. And I think that is absolutely the wrong way to go for these animals. The diets are way too restricted for the early stages of disease. And dry kibble of any sort is absolutely contraindicated for animals with kidney disease, because it really is about moisture in, moisture out, flushing, getting the bloodstream filtered and cleaned. And so we need to have a high moisture diet in order to do that. Interestingly, ever since I graduated vet school, so we're talking almost 40 years ago, 38 years ago, we veterinarians have always talked about, well, when you have kidney disease, we've got this high BUN, hello from the Netherlands, you've got this high BUN, you've got all these nitrogen waste products from protein breakdown that are in the bloodstream and causing all these symptoms and side effects. So we immediately want to pull back on the protein levels for these animals. And that has really stayed in place for way too long. And what we have seen over the years, and I used to see this so much in practice before I became a holistic practitioner, the animals, once they started having kidney problems and we would put them on these really restrictive diets, they would just sort of fall apart and we would get muscle wasting and weakness and just, they look terrible. They'd stop grooming and have no energy, and really not a good situation for our pets. The traditional veterinarians have gotten a tiny bit better because the IRIS, the International Renal Interest Society, did back off on that a little bit. And they are now saying, well, maybe we shouldn't restrict the protein in stage one. What I have found is that my raw-fed dogs and raw-fed patients who are on fairly high protein diets do just fine. They, without restricting them until we're almost at stage four, when we're really having problems where that BUN is just, you know, sky high. Stewie, for instance, his BUN is 74 right now. No big deal. I don't need to restrict his protein. I'm not worried about it. Part of his problem is he's got protein losing enteropathy. He's losing protein in his bowel. If I restrict protein from that dog, he's going to die because he needs protein to hold the blood and the fluids in the blood vessels and to keep what muscle we do have. So I don't want to restrict him. Interestingly, in the research that I was doing for this week, what they really have decided for humans as well as dogs and cats is that it's more about phosphorus, that keeping the phosphorus levels at a certain level and restricting that is actually more important than restricting protein. Unfortunately, I also see people with animals with kidney failure that may be very early, stage one, stage two, that get so wrapped up in restricting phosphorus that if they look on the internet and see there's any phosphorus in a particular ingredient in the diet, they instantly shun it, run away, and say, no, I can't use that, I can't use that. And we have found that not to be the case. For instance, egg whites, low phosphorus, no problem. Egg yolks, high phosphorus. Everybody runs away from that. Egg yolks are blood tonics. They have fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. They are very important for our animals with kidney disease. Feed the whole egg. We back off on the protein when we're starting to either get too much protein in the urine spilling or our BUN is, you know, 150, 200, we just can't get it down. So we want to use probiotics and other things to keep that BUN down. At some point, we're going to have to restrict that protein a little bit. I still don't think that we should restrict it down to the levels of some of these prescription diets that are getting it down to 6 and 8%. That is not compatible with a high quality life. So we don't want to do that, particularly for our cats. Our cats are carnivores. Now, we've got three places. Oh, the other thing that is commonly recommended to restrict is sodium because of hypertension. Sodium plays a very, very minor role in hypertension in our animals. The whole sodium thing comes from human medicine and human dietary beliefs. We eat a lot of processed food that's very high in sodium. A lot of salt is used as a preservative. Pet foods do not have a lot of sodium in them. It's not something that is in a high amount in the pet food. So sodium, the only time that really is going to come into play is if you're making your own food, you don't want to oversalt it for the pets, but they do need sodium for life. It has a lot of functions in cellular functions, electrical transmissions, and the nerves. So we don't want them to have a zero sodium diet. We shouldn't be going there. And I see this same thing occurring with dogs and cats with heart disease. And instantly we get the restrict sodium from their diet. And so people go crazy trying to find a diet that doesn't have any salt in it. Salt's fine because in pet food, it is in a very small amount. It's not like us eating Doritos that are loaded with salt or frozen dinners that are loaded with salt. It's a very different world for our pets. So I don't get too concerned about sodium. What I would be very careful with, and I don't recommend feeding them anyway, are the processed kind of pressed treat, the soft chewy treats that are like in the grocery store, like sausages and those kinds of things. We shouldn't feed those anyway, but those kinds of things may have a lot of salt or sugar used as preservatives. And so that would be an issue. I don't recommend those kinds of treats anyway. So we've got three places we can get our calories from for these guys. We can get them from protein, we can get them from fat, and we can get them from carbohydrates. We know that, and remember, a lot of these animals may have comorbidities. They may have pancreatitis, they may have diabetes, they may have heart disease. We know that we're going to have to restrict protein late in the stage. That leaves us two other places to get our calories from: fat and carbohydrates. Carbohydrates, simple carbs that break down to sugars, are not healthy. They're pro-inflammatory. We're trying to keep inflammation down for these guys. We also have to worry about phosphorus content in different grains, and there are different levels, and you can look them up very easily online because phosphorus restriction for humans with kidney disease is also recommended. So it's really easy to find lists of phosphorus. I found a list the other day that gave 2,000 different foods. Unfortunately, a lot of them were processed foods for human. So phosphorus restriction in stage one, we want to have their phosphorus be, try to keep it 4.6 or less, which is pretty normal and pretty easy to do. By the time we get to stage three, we're going to try to keep that phosphorus less than 5. And this is why it's important to have the lab work run and see where you are. Probably by stage 3, you're going to have to start adding in those phosphorus binders to keep that phosphorus level down where we want it to be and decrease damage. So prior to that, you don't have to be too crazy about it. As far as our grains, if we do end up getting to the point where it's like, oh, geez, I might have to back off a little bit on the protein. I've got an animal that doesn't handle fats that well. And fats are great because they have twice as many calories as carbs and protein. Then if we have to add in some carbs, the one that's lowest in phosphorus is going to be millet. If you want to use something like barley, which is from a Chinese medicine standpoint, is great for kidney failure because it's cooling and draining and it's a blood tonic, soak it first overnight and that will leach out a lot of that, and then you can cook it and it'll be much better. As far as the pancreatitis thing, remember I talked about don't base it just on amylase, because amylase is going to be high in animals whose kidneys are not filtering well. That's just the way it is. It doesn't mean they have pancreatitis. It just means their kidneys are not filtering the amylase. So do not use that as your testing for pancreatitis. Look at things like CPLI, look at imaging to see, you know, and symptoms. Is the animal symptomatic? And that can be problematic as well. If we've got vomiting and diarrhea, is it from the kidney disease or is it from pancreatitis? So I don't shy away from the fats. I love the fats, but what I really like are raw fats, because raw fats are not oxidized and raw fats do not cause pancreatitis. It's the cooked fats that are oxidized that cause pancreatitis problems. The other thing that causes pancreatitis problems is synthetic vitamins and minerals. That's going to be more likely to cause inflammatory reactions. As far as meats, the lowest phosphorus is going to be in tripe. And I know it stinks to high heaven. I did have one client, I made a diet for her. The dog was in fairly advanced kidney disease, big dog. And that pet owner, God bless her, she cooked a tripe and kidney diet for that dog for a year. But the dog lived a high quality life for a year. And she didn't want to, she was a little nervous about feeding raw, or the dog didn't like raw, I can't remember. But she cooked tripe and kidney in her crock pot outside on her deck for a whole year for that dog. And the dog did great with it, never really lost weight, maintained muscle mass, and it worked really, really well for that dog. If we get to stage 4 with these guys, or when we get to stage 4, we want to keep the phosphorus less than 6. So you'll notice it's creeping up because it's harder to keep it down. And with the phosphate binders, you may need to give them 3 or 4 times a day. It's not a once a day deal. But if they're not eating well on their own, they won't eat it in the bowl with the food. With the phosphine, you can mix that in a syringe. It's a powder with some water and get it in that way. But it is more important that we're monitoring that phosphorus. So from my standpoint, protein is not as critical as the phosphorus is, and I don't even get crazy about the phosphorus until we're in the later stages. You know, I'm watching what it's doing, and I want to, you know, stay as much as possible in that normal range, and use the phosphate binders, your sub-Q fluids appropriately.
All right. So that was Dr. Judy Morgan. Dr. Judy Morgan, she has a lot of great YouTube videos out there. But when you get information, sometimes you don't know that you have options, and you do have options. We certainly do hear all the time on kidney, disease. You got to restrict the protein, and you got to restrict the fat. And so I wanted to give you this information from Dr. Judy Morgan and tell you that that's not really what you have to do. I do think that you want to work with a holistic vet, either with somebody like Dr. Judy Jasek, Dr. Judy Morgan. There's Dr. William Faulkner. There's Dr. Todd Cooney. Rita Hogan is not a vet, but she's a canine herbalist and she's darn good. Neely Piazza, who is with our team, is also good and can direct you in the right place. So we don't believe in these prescription diets for the dogs. And I think you've heard us talk about why on a bunch of different levels. Primarily, it's just substandard nutrition, and you'd be better off, and your dog would certainly be better off if you get your dogs on a species appropriate diet. We can help you get your dog on a species appropriate diet. You just heard Dr. Judy Morgan talking about don't put synthetic vitamins and minerals in your dogs. Our food does not have synthetic vitamins and minerals, but people will send an email or call and they will ask, is your food AAFCO certified? Most of that is synthetic vitamins and minerals because they're trying to get to that kibble standard. We're not going to do that. We don't want synthetic vitamins and minerals. They're not even in our supplements. All right. So it's clean. It's a clean species appropriate diet, meat, bones, organ, fat. Yes, we have standalone tripe and we have had standalone kidney. We have the guts and glory. If I don't know how long we're going to keep getting the kidney, some of these things are getting tough, but there's lots of things you can do. Don't give up hope. Don't get on a prescription diet. Don't do processed treats that you find in the pet food store. Those are really, really tempting because they have a lot of pretty pictures and marketing, but they're crap. They're CKS. Crappy kibble syndrome is what that stands for. All right, everybody. Go over to rawdogfoodandco.com. Go to the Learning Center. Watch the New Feeders webinar. Send us an email if you have any questions. We'll answer your questions right here on the podcast. Go to Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends just like Amber. Don't let friends feed kibble. Thanks, you guys. We'll see you tomorrow.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble and where your pet's health is our business.
Just snap.